UFOs? Are they aliens? Government secret projects? The imaginings of disturbed individuals? Or just outright hoaxes? We're here to find out. Welcome to Jim Harold's UFO Encounters.
Welcome to UFO Encounters. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And today we have a very interesting show from maybe a different quarter than you would expect. The book we're going to talk about today is recently out, called How to Talk to an Alien. Can they speak our languages? Can they read our minds? What are they trying to tell us? Our guest is author of said book, Nancy Duterte. And it's interesting because primarily we know Nancy from her psychic work. In fact, she's known as the skeptical psychic, and she advocates an approach to psychic ability called TSP, a form of tested ESP and clairvoyance that combines intuitive imaging with rational feedback. She's a popular speaker, a frequent media guest, and a former CBS radio show host. She's appeared on Coast to Coast AM, Second Sight Radio, and hundreds more regional and national network radio and TV programs. She's also the author of Psychic Intuition, Everything You Ever Wanted to Ask But Were Afraid to Know. She graduated with honors from Princeton University, and she's an attorney specializing in securities litigation. Ooh. Nancy, welcome to the program today.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate it.
Now, let me ask you this. When I saw this book come out from you, I was a little bit surprised because I associate you with psychic work. And I'm like, what in the world is Nancy doing in the world of UFOs? Something must have happened to cause this. But I guess something did happen. Tell us the story behind how you suddenly got interested in UFOs.
Yes, something did happen. And that's very astute of you. Actually, when I had written in my previous book, Psychic Intuition, and I forget what I was talking about. I was talking about, you know, how it took me years and years to finally understand and appreciate that spirits and ghosts and things are actual real entities within our reality. And I said, but, you know, I'd probably have to actually see a space alien in order to, you know, really buy into that.
Right.
Because I wasn't into ufology. You're absolutely 100% right. I had an experience that happened on was June 19, 2011. And I was walking out of a local movie theater at night with my daughter. We'd just seen, it was Woody Allen's Midnight in Paris, which I, in retrospect, thought was really interesting as a movie to have just seen, given the circumstances, because it was all about time travel and going backwards in time. At any rate, we walked out of the movie theater. We were the only people in the entire movie theater, and nobody was there. It was 11:45 at night, and it was dark outside. It was in a big mall parking lot, so there, you know, great visibility. There's a highway next to it, and my daughter said, look up, what's that? Because we're about to get in the car. And I looked up, and about 500 to 1,000 feet up in the air, roughly a half a mile away, and I'm very good with measurement, spatial measurement, by the way, I saw this mass of 20 or 30 orange lights.
Oh, my.
And as you know, I mean, you don't normally, those aren't, you know, conventional airplane colors or anything like that. You don't see those in the sky. You normally see white, red, green, or blue, but orange, no. And there's a huge mass. So I'm trying to figure, what the heck, you know? Are they, are there spotlights coming from the ground where they're bouncing them, you know, up off the clouds? But then again, there wasn't any low cloud cover. It was very, very high. So that was weird. And there were no spotlights. And the more I stared at this mass of lights, the more I saw that it was actually a boomerang-shaped craft, and it was the size of a football field, and it was just sitting there. And my daughter was terrified. She was, you know, yelling, you know, let's go, let's go, let's go. And I said, no, I mean, I have to see what this does. I don't know what this is. You see something like that, and it's a total, you know, it's a paradigm changer. It's a world changer. And sure. So we looked at this for quite a long time, and or it seemed like a long time. And at one point, there was a off of one of the sort of the wingtips of this boomerang shape, there was an orb that telescoped open, and I estimate it was probably about 15 or 20 feet in diameter. It was a pure white, luminescent, clearly defined circular sphere, unlike all the orange lights, which have those sort of rays, like normal lights. Mm-hmm. You see, this had no rays. It was self-contained, uniform in its lightness. And I've just never seen anything like it in my life. It detached itself from the craft, and it started moving around like it was intelligently guided and searching for something. And it did this sort of up and down, curlicue, roundabout type of motion, went over to the other side of the craft, then it went behind it, disappeared briefly, came back over the top of it, and then reattached itself where it came from, on the original wingtip side. And then as we're staring at this thing, interestingly, my daughter said, "Oh, look, it's disappearing." She said this a split second before it disappeared. And in that moment, it either cloaked itself or it dematerialized. I'm not sure which, but in three phases, the wingtips went first, then the midsection of the wings, and then the central section of this football-shaped object in the sky, or football field-shaped object. And it certainly didn't fly away. And I used to, I lived in Manhattan for about 25 years, so I used to watch all the planes come into LaGuardia Airport regularly. So I know about all the optical illusions, you know, when things appear to be hanging in the sky, but actually they're moving closer to you, but it, you know, from a certain angle. And I know all about that stuff. It was nothing like any of that. So yeah, that was a game changer for me.
Did you, and maybe if you said it, maybe I missed it, did you feel this was communicating with you in any way?
You know, I have been asked that, and I think that when something is moving around looking like it's searching and is in a very deliberate type of a movement, you have the feeling like it's trying to communicate. I don't know if it was or not. Now, my only other thought was, we were located, where it was in the sky was literally right across the highway from a reservoir. And I have read certain and heard about certain documented cases of UFO sightings where they have been seen taking water from the planet. And when I first heard those stories, I thought, well, that's just ridiculous. But I heard one of those stories from one of my mentors, and I have no reason to doubt him. So it occurred to me, well, you know, maybe they're scouting out water sources, but...
Or maybe they need it to replenish stocks. Maybe water is important to their biological, assuming they're biological, to their biological life, or possibly some type of sustenance for the craft, if they are in fact of craft. There's a number of reasons they could want water.
Yeah, so I don't know. And you know, it's sort of like when people see a couple of, you know, spaced out dots, you know, and they may see a dot in the middle or maybe a line below it, all of a sudden people say, oh, that's a face. You know, this sort of, I guess, this anthropomorphic type of thinking. People make assumptions based on the way that their brains are wired. So that my assumption may have initially been it was trying to communicate, but I may have been projecting my own sense on it. So I don't know the answer to that.
I believe you coined a new term in this book. I believe you have. Maybe it's been used in the past. I'm not sure, but I think it comes from you. Exolinguistics. Explain to us what exolinguistics are and how you arrived at that term.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I have coined that term, And I mean, a lot of people, at least in the UFO field, have heard of exopolitics, and that's been around for a while. And sure. Basically that refers to, I mean, exo meaning outside of, or in this case, off planet, and politics meaning how to deal with, space aliens or visitors, star visitors. And it occurred to me at some point that, you know, we seem to have all these great plans for dealing politically with our visitors, but nobody is talking about the method of communication. And as I pointed out in a recent presentation, I said, you know, it seems like Washington's kind of a perfect example. You know, everybody's trying to talk about politics, but there's no communication going on.
True.
So how can you have politics without communication? So why not look at this issue? So exolinguistics is the study of language or off-planet languages. And I don't think anybody's done it before.
Now, in terms of, and I don't know if there, because to me, UFO reports, I know we have MUFON and various organizations that collect reports and so forth, but it's so scattered, it's probably really hard to get a handle on this. But you've researched all of this. Do you have a sense of what percentage of UFO encounters entail perceived communication by the experiencer? Are we talking half? Are we talking 20%, 30%? Any data on that you've been able to glean?
I think it really depends on what you're referring to as communication. And, you know, I've cataloged a whole bunch of different types, and they are not all traditional linguistic type of communication, but you have things that range from like audible speech, telepathic communication, electronic manipulation of devices, crop circles, symbols, dreams, channeling, remote viewing, certain types of technological devices such as implants, mental downloads, UFO spacecraft responses, usually with lights, and different types of body language. So you have a ton of different ways that they apparently communicate with us, not always involving a form of direct language. But I would say, given what I've looked at, in cases, I mean, when people talk about contact normally involves some form of communication, so whether it's, you know, our traditional language or whether it's something else. I'd say almost all of them.
What have you found that surprised you? What form of communication that never wasn't even on your radar, so to speak, but you found out about it and found out it was far more prevalent than you thought? What kinds of types have surprised you?
I think it's been, you know, I've heard about automatic writing and psychic channeling and hypnotic trance channeling and mental downloads and all that kind of stuff. I've heard about those for many years. So those didn't surprise me. They might surprise other people, but not me in particular. You know, people have also assumed that crop circles are a form of communication. I've always had some doubts about that for a bunch of different reasons, but it may well be. I think the thing that really surprised me the most was that I think there's when aliens are apparently able to communicate with humans using audible speech, they not only have their own apparent alien languages, and there are many of them, not just one. A lot of contactees will say, you know, I'm the only contactee and this is the only language they speak and they're only speaking to me. And that is not at all what I'm discovering. There are many languages. And the other thing is that they seem to be many of them, but not all of them, really good at communicating with humans in a variety of human languages. So that was, I for whatever reason, I just didn't expect that. I figured, you know, if aliens are going to show up, let's say they're coming from a distant galaxy or something, or a distant dimension, or one that is difficult to get here, they finally show up on, you know, in our physical reality on planet Earth. And you would think that they would want to kind of maximize their odds of communicating with no matter who right. happened to be walking around. And if they were going to do that, you would, well, they would either speak English, because English is the most commonly or widely spoken languages, if you include first, second, and foreign languages. But if you were looking for the number one natively spoken language, you'd have to be looking at Mandarin Chinese and then Spanish and then English. So I figured at least they're probably communicating in one of those languages. And they communicate in many, many languages. So as unusual as I discovered in one contact experience, they were communicating in Finnish from Finland, which is one of the most difficult, apparently, Indo-European languages to speak. And it's only spoken by 5 million people. So why choose that one? But they're apparently good at it.
Well, I would think that if they're technological, and this is almost assuming kind of the, and I know he wrote the foreword to your book, Stanton Friedman, but the Stanton Friedman model, where we're talking about biological beings coming here in a spacecraft of some type, I think by definition, they would have to be so technologically superior to us that I think it would be reasonable to expect that they would have the capability to instantaneously master and translate our languages, whether it's by superior intellect or by technology. I mean, I think that would almost be expected.
I think a lot of people make that assumption, and that may be true. Well, first of all, it really depends on how many species or races of aliens you're talking about. And I have read estimates of anywhere between 4 to 57 to, you know, 82 to 160 to more than that. So we're, and I'm sure nobody has the definitive answer on that, because for many reasons, it hasn't been necessarily, we haven't met all the species that are theoretically out there. But if you look at all of them, then you have to decide, well, you know, who's coming from where? Are they all coming in spaceships, as you just suggested, or some of them from different places? People suggested inside the Earth, or interdimensional, or you know, other types of locations, which wouldn't necessarily imply higher intelligence. And I think it's been suggested that while some of them have unbelievably high intelligence, and I've spoken with you know, friends of mine who have said, don't even bother thinking about playing like three-dimensional chess with them. It's like, forget it. You will lose in the intellectual game, hands down. So just mm-hmm. don't go there. To other examples where you say, well, you know, maybe they don't have that ability. There was a case that I wrote in my book, How to Talk to an Alien, that happened in Poland. And those alleged aliens that hopped into a farmer's cart in the middle of Poland, they couldn't speak any human language, certainly not Polish. And they were speaking in their own language, which the contactee described as sounding, they wrote it down phonetically in a transcript later, something like, you know, in other words, P, the letters P and T repetitively, like that. They couldn't speak any human languages. Others of them, while they may not be relying on their innate intelligence, others of them seem to be relying on different types of technologies. And so some of them, in contact case histories, have been described as having little knobs that they adjust on their helmets that sort of switch to a different language. Others of them seem to be holding unusual bits of, technological devices, such as spheres or wands or boxes or things that, when they're activated, they seem to activate language in the either ears or brain of the contactee. So that's not necessarily an innate language. That may be some different or higher level of civilization. So I think there, you know, there are all kinds of ambiguities here that, you know, you can't really jump to conclusions about. You got to just sort of see what's out there. And in order to see what's out there, you got to be willing to look.
Now, what, and you shared some stories with us. What is, and this could be one or it could be multiple, one or more of the most compelling cases of what you think stands up as an example of communication between human and aliens that you've run across in your research?
One of the most compelling examples? Yikes.
Yeah, something that you say, now, when you look at it, you say, wow.
Well, I mean, I think that people, you know, it's just, it's human nature. You're going to be more inclined to be impressed by something that you have personally experienced. I mean, that's why a lot of people say, UFO stuff doesn't mean anything to me, therefore it doesn't exist. Which, by the way, was sort of my frame of mind before all of this. So I get it. I think I've been maybe most impressed by listening to some recordings of a friend and colleague of mine who has, he's been somewhat regularly in touch with a group of, I mean, it's hard to know what they are. Either they're aliens or, as he suggested, they're human time travelers from the future. And therefore, they've evolved quite a bit. So they're somewhat alien to us as we are now. And I've listened, and they allegedly, according to him, and according to them, I guess, they have just massive craft that are located somewhere outside the Earth's atmosphere. And some of them are what he calls language centers, where they do all of that sort of manipulation of languages so that whoever they're dealing with, they can, you know, sort of almost do like a Google translation, an immediate translation of a language so the human gets it. And then there are apparently exploration ships and there are other motherships and things like that. At any rate, I've heard some of these recordings and they're very, very interesting. They don't particularly sound human. They sound like, and it's very hard to tell the gender of the person or people speaking. They sound sort of like what I've described as like a cross between a man and a woman, sort of middle-aged, Asian-sounding, more maybe female, speaking really fast with a really strong accent. Very, very difficult to understand the words. But my friend is, not only is he able to really hear the words with much more clarity than I can hear them, but he has told me that he's received phone calls from them where he apparently starts speaking in their native language, which is not a human language. And his girlfriend has been a witness to this. He doesn't remember it. And he has no personal knowledge of ever having learned this language. So he doesn't know why or where he would get it from. Huh. But when you hear things like that, I mean, it's just very, it certainly makes you wonder.
Now, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, I think that's probably the most sort of amazing type of alien language that I've actually heard. I've also received my own calls, but nothing where I could make out the words as clearly as I could with this guy's recordings.
So I want to be clear here, because I think when I pick up the book, I assumed that you were going to talk primarily about cases where somebody saw a UFO, maybe even said they saw an alien face to face, and there was some kind of communication, whether it was verbal or it was telepathic. But if I'm to understand correctly, the quote alien doesn't even need to be present. This does not have to be a face to face thing. There's some thought that aliens might communicate with us even when they're not in the same physical space.
Absolutely. And they appear to do that regularly. That's not even a, that's like a yeah. There are people like abduction researcher David Jacobs, who has said that, in his opinion, all communication that's being done during either alien contact or alien abduction experience is always 100% telepathic. And he says that goes for whether the conversations are being telepathically communicated alien to alien, alien to human, or human to human during those scenarios. But as soon as the humans are returned back to their normal state, planet Earth and all of that, everything reverts back to audible speech communication, because according to him, we don't have telepathic abilities. And I disagree with that for a number of reasons. And since you're familiar with my book, Psychic Intuition, you know that I absolutely believe that psychic abilities, which include telepathic abilities, can be taught and trained, because I'm a living, walking example of that. I wasn't psychic before I trained. You could certainly do it in also remote viewing training, which I'm also trained in. The military did it. There are a number of different ways. Also, when I started looking at the case histories, I saw that you have, a bunch of significant and major documented case histories of UFO encounters where the aliens are communicating both ways, telepathically and with audible speech. And sometimes they sort of go back and forth. If they're really not good in the speech category, or if the human isn't really getting it, you know, they'll revert back to this telepathic form of communication, which, as I've pointed out, most people don't think about this because they say, oh yeah, I just knew, or I just heard the voice in my head. Well, they don't think about, well, what was the actual method, the telepathic method? And you have several different types. You can have the wholesale imposition of the thought juxtaposed on top of your brain. That's one way. You can have it communicated visually, or you could have it communicated in an alien language, or you could have it communicated in a human language. And people get it every different which way. So it's a little bit more complex, you know. And my whole goal here is to kind of create, if I can, a Rosetta Stone for alien languages, because I think it's really important that we as humans begin to at least try to understand their modes of communication in order to understand the really deeper issues of things like, what are their motives? Are they, you know, the question that all the ufologists are always asking, are they good or are they evil? Are they here to, you know, destroy the planet, take over the genetically reduce the human population into something else? Or are they here to help us? Are they going to help us stop our wars and destruction and environmental disasters? And what are they doing? Well, you're not really going to know unless they decide to tell you, unless you know how to communicate with them. And that's the point of all of this. I'm building a database. And I have reached out to many people who are contactees, or who are channelers, or automatic writers, or who own certain artifacts, and asking them to, show these things to me so that I can start cross-comparing them. That's how you do it. That's how they solved the riddle of the Egyptian hieroglyphics.
Speaking of hieroglyphics, are there written examples of communication that we've recovered? I mean, I know people have talked about markings on spacecraft they have seen. Even if you look at something like Rendlesham Forest, I think James Peniston claimed that there were some kind of writings on the craft there. What do we have by way, if anything, of written or perceived written communication from aliens?
Well, and I think that they're basically, when you talk about, well, how do we get samples of alien writing? There are three basic categories, three basic ways to get it. You get the actual artifacts, of which there really aren't that many. I mean, there people always talk about the I-beam that came out of the Roswell crash site debris, which obviously the military has, and they ain't giving it back, not as far as I know. And so you don't have too many actual artifacts. You have the memories and recollections of contactees and abductees, and usually, and you're correct, a lot of times there are symbols and writings and things like that that they see on the interior and exterior of these spacecraft. And then the last way, which is what I'm trying to do is to include this, put this back into the, you know, instead of throwing the bathwater or the baby out with the bathwater, include the category of more subjective understandings of writing, such as channeled writing, psychic writing, automatic writing, dream recollections, things like that. Bring them back into the fold of this scientific type of exploration and start comparing them, you know, with the actual artifacts or the recollections, and start to see where there are similarities. And by the way, there are. I was very interested to find out recently that, talk about an actual artifact. There was a case in Florida where a man had contact, apparently several contacts with spacecraft that landed that he saw and an alien who came out. And at one point, the craft took off and a letter was dropped to the ground. And it was not on any type of, it was something that kind of looked like paper, but it wasn't paper. It was not a known earthly material. It had strange symbols or glyphs on it, not any type of human language. It appeared to be written almost in the form of a letter. I have a copy of it that I've included in my book, How to Talk to an Alien. And it's in this style that is called dot and line. There were a few categories that were developed by a Delaware psychiatrist. He's the only guy I know who's ever really put significant thought into trying to categorize different types of alien languages. At any rate, I just found out that the 9-year-old daughter of a fellow who's now deceased, who was an engineer and very involved in the UFO world, mm-hmm. she apparently started in some type of a state, started writing on a scrap of paper or an envelope, a bunch of strange symbols and characters. Turns out, according to at least two witnesses, that those characters were identical to the characters that were dropped on this alien letter out of a spacecraft.
Huh.
You know, so what are the odds of that? And by the way, the odds are pretty good, because apparently the more you start to look, the more you start to see that these types of dot and line characters come up over and over and over again all over the world. So there's something going on. And for that reason, you really do need to include back in things like, you know, psychic channeling and dream channeling and hypnotic stuff. You have to.
What has been the reaction to your thoughts on this? Because, you know, I've been doing this forever, 10 years. I interview people all the time about UFOs, and this does seem like a unique take on it and something different when we so many times see much of the same. What has been the feedback from ufology on this to what you're doing?
I have been really pleasantly surprised. I'm getting very, very, very positive feedback on it. People seem to be genuinely really interested, and you're right. They say it's something, it's sort of a brand new approach. And for some reason, I don't really get it. People haven't looked at this before. I just don't understand why. It seems kind of obvious to me, but maybe that's, you know, my background is in college, that's what I majored in. It was language. Mm-hmm. And I'm trained in, so I'm fluent in French and I speak some German and Thai. So for me, languages is, that's sort of an automatic go-to. My grandfather spoke 8 languages. He was Swedish. I had, after I gave a presentation at MUFON, MUFON International in September, there was a man who came up to me afterwards out of the audience, and he had tears in his eyes. And he said, I just don't even know what to say to you. I have to thank you because I had to leave the room when you were giving this presentation. I played a bunch of sound clips and things like that. And he said, some of these things you played, I know those sounds. I have heard them. I've never told a living soul about them. And he said, I started sobbing so loudly, I had to get up and leave the room. So I know that I'm reaching people. And people, this is it's a level of sharing that maybe hasn't been done on any type of a large scale before. So I think it's so far so good, very effective.
Well, it's certainly a fascinating conversation and a fascinating book. The book is How to Talk to an Alien. Can they speak our languages? Can they read our minds? And what are they trying to tell us? Nancy Duterte, where can people find the book and also plug into all of the other work you're doing, including the psychic side?
Easy enough on the book. They can, you know, go to, you know, the major outlets, Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any other bookstores. And it's currently out there. It's called How to Talk to an Alien. My other books are also available. They can take a look at those. They're on all different types of topics. And if they have some type of a recorded sample of alien speech, I'm very, very interested. Same thing goes with any type of writing, of alien writing. If they can send it to me, I would love to be able to include it in my database. They can get a hold of me either on my new website, which is called talkalien.com. It's I'm still working out some kinks with it since it's new, but that's good. Or they can reach me also on my other more established website, which is theskepticalpsychic.com.
Nancy Duterte, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
And thank you for tuning in. We certainly do appreciate it. And I'm sure Nancy would agree. Keep your eye to the sky. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye, everybody.